Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is Preview Spotlight number 198 for the May 2024 solicitations. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Marvel Previews, and Diamond Previews. I find these incredibly helpful to find out what's coming out a few months from now and kind of plan my order appropriately. Sometimes there's stuff that sounds good on paper, but I look at the art, or something about the solicitation doesn't work for me, or there's something that I wouldn't have noticed unless, you know, the art had caught my eye, or the solicitation looks pretty cool, or something like that. Matter of fact, there have been a couple of times where I'll see something and realize I missed the first two issues or something like that, and go order them. So just flipping through these catalogs is kind of my monthly equivalent of the old Sears Toys catalog when I was a kid, of, you know, finding out what cool things were out there to be had and then making sure I got them as best I could. So whether you get the printed catalogs or not, this information is available online at the various websites for the distributors and the publishers and such. Comics are a pre-order business. It makes sense to know what's coming out so you can let your retailer know so they can have it so you can get it. So once again, my first pick is the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Marvel Previews, and Diamond Previews.
Hey, this is James here, and I'm looking at the first item that came up in the DC Connect, and literally it's on page number one. There's a whole event going on here at DC. And that was part of their free comic book day selection, which I have in my hands, but I have not read yet. And it is called the Absolute Power event. And essentially, this really isn't a spoiler because they've already talked about it and had news articles and write-ups. But Amanda Waller has a Trinity of Evil. So I'm guessing analogs of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So the evil version of them would be like Failsafe, whoever the evil version of Superman that they choose, and Wonder Woman, whoever that is they pick. And they are going to team up with Waller and face off against the Justice League, which is, I mean, they're there, but they're kind of missing in action. Their Titans have kind of taken over. And I guess this is a way to get things ramped up for the Justice League. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this thing, we get a new Justice League book. It's getting the powers that be in the DC universe back together again, instead of off in their own books. So the first one on page one is called Absolute Power Ground Zero, number one. And it is written by Mark Waid, Joshua Williamson, which I'm cool with, Nicole Maines, and Chip Zdarsky, who he can write well, but his Batman really did not work for me, so I dropped it. And the art is Gleb Melnikov. Oh, God, I'm butchering these names. Skylar Partridge and Vikan Marion. I don't know what the V is for. This is a $4.99, 48-page kickoff. This is going to be the three different writers that are kind of writing, I guess, this event, the first thing. And this is just the one clip that I'm doing on this first one. This is the kickoff book for the Ground Zero thing. But just so you know, there's Absolute Power number one. There are the books. There's three books that are called Absolute Power Task Force. And I guess that would be seven, Roman numeral seven. There's numbers one, two, and three. And this is supposed to be the event from the viewpoint of the evil villains. And honestly, I don't think I'm going to pick those up. I mean, I could, but It's more like as the big events come out, I'll read the main book to kind of know what's going on. But if I don't have to read the side books, I won't. And then there's an Absolute Power Origins, which tells you why Amanda Waller did what she did. So if you're interested in seeing why? Because DC needed an event. That is why. But the reason why I'm going to be picking up this event book, just so you know, it ties into Superman, which I'm already getting. It ties into Wonder Woman, which I'm already getting. And it ties into Batman, which I am not getting. And I don't know if I'll pick it up. I'm curious if you guys are going to be picking it up. I'm curious what you guys have to say about these Absolute Power Task Force 7 books, if you guys think they're interesting. I don't know. I'll see what you guys say. Maybe you guys can sell me on them. But for now, I will be picking up this kickoff book, the main books, and the books I am already getting, and on to my next pick.
Next up on page 2 of the DC Connect is Absolute Power number 1. This is written by Mark Waid with art by Dan Mora, and I'll be honest, it's the main reason I'm getting it. I'm getting a little burnt out on some of these event series. This whole Trinity of Evil thing and stealing everybody's powers, I'm more trepidatious about it than excited about it. But Mark Waid, I trust as a writer, I trust him as an event writer, particularly at DC. Dan Mora's art's fantastic. I'm looking forward to this. I'm not going to say I'm going all in on this event, but I am planning on picking up the Ground Zero and, yeah, even the Task Force 7 and Origin stuff. So what they've solicited so far, I'm planning on getting those miniseries. I'm going to get the titles that I'm already getting. I'll look at the others on a case-by-case basis, but it's not going to be enough to get me to go pick up Batman or Detective or something like that, probably. I am expecting as well that we're going to get a Justice League series at the end of this. I'd be shocked if we didn't. I just hope DC winds up in a solid place after this event, and I'm really surprised how few DC titles I'm ordering these days. If it wasn't for Absolute Power, literally my order from DC would be half of what it's looking like it's going to be. So I'm going to give them a shot on this event. I'm going to see where they're going, but I'll be honest, I'm not expecting a ton out of it either. So, granted, that's a lukewarm recommendation, but that's what I got for Absolute Power number 1 on page 2 of the DC Connect.
Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the DC Connect, and this time I'm over on page number 12, where I was surprised to see this pop up. I don't really read a lot of the comic news, you know, like the rumors before the solicits come out, you know, are basically what the news is today. But on page 12, we have Nice House by the Sea, and it is by James Tynion IV, and art is by Alvaro Martinez Bueno, and they have interior sample art that just looks gorgeous, just beautiful, beautiful art. This is the highly anticipated sequel to James Tynion's and Mr. Bueno's Nice House on the Lake, by the Lake, which I thought was a fantastic book. It started really, really, really strong. It got good. It got a little bit weird near the end and then closed out nicely. I liked it enough where I did pick up a hardcover of it because it was great material. And so when I saw this is a sequel, I'm on board. It is a 12-issue maxi series, mini series, whatever you want to call that. And it's on sale July 24th. And I will read you the solicit because it ties into it, but I'm like, huh, how does it tie into it? I don't know. No one who was invited to the house knew Max, but she knew each and every one of them. Masters of their fields, titans of the industry, and knowledge. They all represented the best and brightest of humanity. So when Max whispered to each of them the truth of what they deserved to be saved from disaster, to carry on the flame of civilization in a paradise built just for them, they all leaped at the chance. Why not? Why shouldn't they be the ones to live forever? Isn't it their destiny to survive the culling of the lesser herd? What being named the future of humanity be nice? And that's basically the premise of what the first book was about. The people were in this beautiful, gorgeous mansion, the best of the best in, like they said, their industries and fields, whether it's science or beauty or whatever it was that they did, whatever they brought to the table, arts and sciences kind of brought together inside the house. But they were kind of trapped on the property. And the reason why they were trapped, I mean, all of their needs were taken care of. Food, anything you can imagine, the most luxe of accommodations, the most beautiful scenery. But being trapped there, they're like, naturally, you want to leave. Why are we stuck here? Because there's an apocalypse and the world's being wiped out. And Max kind of latched onto these people and wanted to save a vestige of humanity. So that's the premise of Nice House on the Lake, Nice House by the Sea. We shall see. Maybe it's another group of people. I just don't know. But it was a fantastic story. I'm on board for this. It sounds good. If you're into different books, I wouldn't even call it a horror tinge, but there's an apocalypse going on, but the people are saving. It's more about the danger that you don't even see, you know, maybe that's alluded to. This is a book that you'll want to pick up. I thought it was fantastic, and on to my next pick.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. It is on page 14, Joker, The World. Now, I could have sworn that the last time they did this for Batman, it was like a 80-page comic book, but it very well could have been a hardcover, and I just don't remember. But I say that because this is listed as a 184-page standard-sized hardcover, $24.99. So there's a lot of comic here, but it is a hardcover that you are getting. Listed on sale September 17th. Coincidentally, as the solicitation will mention, just before the Joker movie comes out. There's a whole host of writers here, including people like Geoff Johns. Interesting to see David Rubin is mentioned in here. He's kind of a stylized artist, so he's doing some writing probably of his own story. We have art by David Rubin also listed there, Jason Fabok, and a whole bunch of names in general that I don't recognize, and that's because it says, Gotham's Clown Prince of Crime goes global in this worldwide anthology, Joker the World. This 184-page book will feature Joker stories by creative teams from 13 different countries. So there you go. People who you don't know because we're seeing their talent, probably in a lot of cases for the first time here in the U.S. And also, as done with the Batman the World, there's unique versions of this that are designed specifically for each of the contributing countries. So really meant as this big collaboration, jam piece type project with a lot of different creative teams providing something here. So as this original Joker project launches worldwide on September 17th, and the complete anthology will be localized to the following international territories. We've got here listed what those are: Spain, Germany, Italy, Brazil, Mexico, the Czech Republic, Turkey, Japan, Korea, North America, Argentina, Cameroon, and Poland. What does the Joker do when on holiday in Spain? How has he inspired others to follow in his footsteps, creating Joker duplicates in Germany and Turkey? How does a Joker in Cameroon find inspiration? Only the top writers and artists from each country can tell these stories about the world's best-known villain, who happens to have a movie coming out in October. And there's a couple of pages of preview art here that all looks pretty good. You know, I think it's modern comics, and it's about the Joker.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the DC Connect, and no, I'm not looking at Omnibuy, even though I might be picking one or two up. The book that I was looking at, which I found very, very interesting, was on page 16, and it is Jason Todd Lives Forever. No, it's from the DC Vault, Death in the Family, Robin Lives, number one. But literally, the top said, Jason Todd Lives. What's next for the fallen Robin? Everyone remembers Death in the Family. I think everybody and their brother purchased Death in the Family if you're buying comics back in the 1980s. I was not reading DC. I was a Marvel zombie. The only thing I bought beside Marvel was basically Image Comics when Image launched. That's just my comfort, my wheelhouse. To this day, I feel more comfortable reading Marvel than I do DC. But I did pick up Death in the Family, and I did pick up the comic when Superman died, because those were like stories that went all over the United States. And so I do have my comics where I remember Jason Todd dying, the Robin, not the original Robin, but the next Robin. And that was based on voters, you know, people calling in and making their vote that they wanted Robin to die, which is kind of dark, but at the same time, a little bit funny. And so this one is saying what would have happened with the story. We have it in the, you know, the script here, if people would have voted for basically Jason Todd to live and the Joker to die. And so I thought that was just such a cool premise. It's $4.99, 32 pages. This is issue number one. It's by J.M. DeMatteis, and the art is by Rick Leonardi. And I think it'd be cool to see this, the story play out. I don't know how many issues it's going to go for. It does not say it's a one-shot. It just says number one. So this is something that could go for 2 or 3 issues, 4 issues, or it could go for many more. I just have no clue. I doubt this is an ongoing. This is definitely an Elseworlds. It's not labeled Elseworlds, but this is essentially a what if in the DC universe, which is Elseworlds. So I'm on board for this. I want to see what happened. Let's see if this is a fun read. I don't know, but I'm on board. On to my next pick.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect Spotlight. On page 16 of that catalog, it is From the DC Vault, Death in the Family, Robin Lives Number 1. So we have 2 colons in that title. This is Jason Todd Lives. What's next for the fallen Robin? Find out in the all-new story fans have wanted for more than 30 years. Now, in general, there's a very short solicitation here. Basically, what happens if Jason Todd survived? And it begins with the death of the Joker. So I'm uncertain, though. Is this kind of the reason why they did the, you know, final printing of that story? You know, the last 2 or 3 pages or whatever changed around from the famous death of Jason Todd story? Is that meant to be sort of the zero issue to then, like, maybe a new mini series? And that's not explained on this page. It's a $4.99 comic book for 32 pages. So one would assume that they're trying to launch an ongoing series out of this. We're not getting any information about like a issue number count or anything like that. Just issue 1 and a creative team, J.M. DeMatteis as the writer, and art and cover by Rick Leonardi. So we've got a pretty excellent team here to tell this story. And on the fact that it is sort of this, you know, hypothetical, you know, almost Elseworlds type of a thing, I think I'm willing to give it the $4.99 at least to see what this issue is. And if it turns into a monthly that's telling sort of an alternate future or an alternate version of the past where Jason survived and all of these other things happened, I'm on board for that. I think, like I said, J.M. DeMatteis tells a good story, so we're up for something interesting for sure. And there's a couple of pages of the preview art here from Rick Leonardi, which looks great. So check this out if it sounds interesting to you, or maybe you happen to be reading back in the day and had dialed the 900 number to decide whether Jason should live, and you're finally getting to see, you know, the results of what that might have brought you here in the year 2024. But check it out, and on to the next pick. This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. It is on page 18. Another of their Elseworlds relaunch stories. This time they're delving into the Dark Knights of Steel, which started a couple years ago, and spinning something off from that. So again, that was the idea of, you know, the DC characters in a medieval setting. And here, this is Dark Knights of Steel, All Winter, number 1. And all you have to do is see the main cover for this here by Tirso Kahns, and you get the idea they're going for sort of a Vikings story. And if you look at the preview art on the next page, this is 100% appealing to fans of the show Vikings or, you know, material like that. Maybe you remember your Nordic relatives or something like that, and hearkening back to what it must have been like in the land of fire and ice, conquering and all those type of things. Maybe this is your type of story. It says, "The snow falls thick, blood runs black, and color itself is only a distant memory. The legendary assassin Deathstroke stalks a frozen wasteland, killing for coin among a nation of ever-warring Jarls. But when our murderer for hire finds himself cast in the role of reluctant guardian, will he fight to end the icy curse destroying his land, or be consumed by the sins of his own dark past?" Given we're spinning off at Deathstroke, I'm going to go for the second option there. It says, "The red-hot Dark Knights of Steel epic expands into bone-chilling new territories with new surprises in store." Ooh. Wonder what other characters are going to show up here. We have a variant cover with kind of an Ice Queen type thing, so maybe we have Ice or, what's her name from The Flash? Oh, I can't think of it now. Something Frost. Anyway, we have this as a $4.99 comic, 40 pages. Issue 1 of 6. The writer here is Jay Kristoff with Tom Taylor, and art is by Tirso Kahns and Ricardo Federici. So definitely the type of creative teams I would expect to see telling stories like that. And again, in the preview art, you can see a very Viking type setting. This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. This is another part of their Elseworlds stories that they're relaunching here. Of course, last month was the first issue of the Gotham by Gaslight extension. This is Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age number 2. Here they only use one colon and a dash, or a hyphen. So I appreciate mixing it up a little bit here on these complex titles. This is written by Andy Diggle with art and cover by Leandro Fernandez. So again, another great team up here for one of these properties. This is issue 2 of 12, 40 pages, $40 pages for $4.99. Now, I was a little reluctant on the way this was maybe being presented with issue 1 to really jump into this. You know, you're taking essentially what was a 40, 60 page type one-shot comic back in the day and turning this into a 12-issue miniseries, seemingly built around the idea of, what if you had Gotham by Gaslight, Batman, you know, in the Victorian era? Well, what if there were Kryptonians? I think they're actually doing something a little different here, and I'll read the solicitation and point out what I'm talking about. It says, upon uncovering a mystery involving ancient relics, Batman must battle against Talia al Ghul and the League of Shadows for control of a dangerous weapon. As court magician John Constantine whispers in the ear of Queen Victoria and Professor Adam Strange explores the farthest reaches of the Antarctic, the strange rumors they're all chasing about the lost Kryptonian age of mankind begin to take on the ring of truth. So, I think actually reading this solicitation gives me the idea they're not necessarily just going to drop Superman. Like, what happens if Batman Gotham by Gaslight suddenly has Superman running around instead of Jack the Ripper? I think what they're trying to do is set up the Victorian fascination with, you know, these lost cultures, and you had British explorers were going into convents and places like that in these far-reaching parts of the Orient, or you had, you know, the exhibitions of mummies and things like that celebrating this mysterious Egyptian culture that they were coming to learn about. And I think that's what they're going to play on here, is this idea of something from the past that our Victorian heroes and kind of familiar characters are dealing with. Now, I still think Superman is going to show up in here somehow, but I think they're being a little smarter about it, and I'm curious to see where it goes. This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog, this time from page 28. It's Action Comics number 1067, written by Gail Simone and Rainbow Rowell, with art by Eddie Barrows and Sean Torme. And this is $4.99, 40 pages. It's one of their main stories with backup story type format. And this is the beginning of a new story arc. They've gone since... It was the, not Brainiac, the Bizarro story. That was with Tom Taylor, or whoever it was, with that one. But this is Gail Simone and Eddie Barrows, two superstars of the business, telling a Superman story here for three issues. And the way they describe that is Superman and the Challenge from the Stars. Superman fights for two worlds. When a massively powerful alien race makes Earth their arena, Superman must stand alone against impossible challenges that threaten locations all around the world and the lives of those he loves. A not-to-be-missed epic tale of Superman's strength, wit, and resourcefulness in an early stage of his public career. So I guess we're maybe dealing with a younger Superman here. Plus, as a backup, we have New York Times best-selling author Rainbow Rowell making her DC debut and taking on the most powerful woman in Superman's life, Lois Lane. Now, this cover gives him sort of the grizzled reporter type look, but it does sound like they're going a little younger, and he's got the Golden Age S on his chest. So they're definitely calling back to an early time here for the character, and it's got the little Superman Superstars tag on here to let you know that this is a kind of a creator spotlight take I think, on the character. And this is, again, $4.99 on sale July 10th.
This is Jason with my first pick from the DC Connect catalog on page 52. It's Wesley Dodds, The Sandman, trade paperback. It says the Golden Age Sandman takes center stage in a thrilling noir mystery that finds his greatest discoveries falling into the wrong hands. It took years of testing and experimentation for Wesley to perfect his sleep gas, creating the perfect weapon for fighting crime without permanently harming criminals. But when the secret journal detailing all his failed, all-too-deadly formulas is stolen, the Sandman must hunt down the thief and root out those pulling their strings before the contents of his journal are released. The new Golden Age dawns in this collection, reprinting the stylish 6-issue miniseries from writer Robert Venditti and artist Riley Rossmo, collects Wesley Dodds' The Sandman, issues 1-6. So I really like the mystery man, street-level character with some powers, but also not necessarily with having to have powers. This is set in 1940, before the Sandman joins the JSA, so he's already been active for a little bit. But I thought they did a good job of not necessarily going over his origin story, but just talking about, you know, how he went on a trail of, you know, trying to find the people that stole his journal. And it just keeps leading higher and higher up the chain, so to speak, chain of command and things like that, and just makes for a very interesting story as he continues to track down the person or persons responsible. So yeah, I think it did a really good job, and it has a nice little ending which connects, you know, Wesley Dodds' Sandman character into the, you know, the new Golden Age that they are running right now. So if you are a Wesley Dodds Sandman fan, mystery man fan, or like, you know, noir crime and things like that, I think you'll really like this book set in 1940, Wesley Dodds the Sandman.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog, this time from page 55. Back in their collected edition section, we're looking at Superman, The Triangle Era Omnibus, Volume 1. It says, the Triangle Era of the Man of Steel presented in its complete chronology. Writers here, including Dan Jurgens, Louise Simonson, Roger Stern, Jerry Ordway, art by Dan Jurgens, Jerry Ordway, John Bogdanov, Bob McLeod, and others. This is $125, 1376 pages. Quite a beefy volume here. Hardcover, of course, this is oversized, so slightly larger than a typical. Dimensions for your artwork. And this is on sale in September, September 3rd to be specific. This is the time period that I remember not actively reading every Superman issue, but this was the time period I was growing up. So pretty much anything that I ever picked up about Superman at the time was from one of these series, and it was always connected to something else that was going on. And you have the idea of not necessarily like an ongoing story necessarily in each volume, but like elements would crisscross back and forth, kind of the way that I remember it. And something to kind of make sense for your character wasn't reappearing in random places around the world or battling different people every week. And again, the solicitation here just kind of describes what's going on. But basically, this was under the direction of editor Mike Carlin at the time. And the different creative teams worked closely to bridge things across their various titles. And it is collecting the issues, Superman number 49 through 63, Starman number 28, Adventures of Superman 472 to 486, Action Comics 659 to 673, and Superman the Man of Steel number 1 through 8. So check this out if you remember that time period, want to go back and revisit it, or if you're interested to see what comics about Superman were like kind of in the late 80s, early 90s time frame, getting that week-to-week type consistency that really we probably haven't had for Superman since then. You know, a lot of the characters' titles were doing similar things at the time. Batman, X-Men, for sure, were doing something similar. I think this will be a nice package for you if that's what you're looking for and don't want to track down the digital app, you know, kind of clicking through various events or timelines, jumping back and forth, get it from one of your preferred retailers and hopefully get a little bit of a deal here on that. But I think even just as it is, you're getting a pretty good deal for almost 1,400 pages at $125.
Hey guys, it's Chris Brawley, aka the Brawlinator, on the comic book page, Slack channel, and forums, and the book club. And I am skipping all the big crossovers and story arcs and important stories in the big two. And I'm going straight to the back of the DC Connect Collected Editions section of the DC Connect Previews catalog this month. And I am looking at page 56 and 57, really. There are a string here of Elseworlds collections. The Elseworlds Batman Volume 1 2024 edition, the Elseworlds Superman Volume 1, the Elseworlds Justice League Volume 1, and Volume 2 2024 editions. And these are just, you know, man, Elseworlds, it really was DC's answer to Marvel's What If series. And I think most of the time, they did just as well, if not sometimes better, stories like Batman Holy Terror, Superman Speeding Bullets, Elseworlds Finest, and so many more. Now, these are softcover editions. They're all each $34.99 retail price. I know you can get those at a bit of a markdown through some of the online providers such as Cowabunga Comics or Deep Discount Comics. I think you're going to have to go to Cowabunga still. I don't quite think Eric's got Deep Discount Comics up to its full potential yet, but he will offer you a great deal if you go to Cowabunga. They are in various page lengths. Like, for instance, the Superman Elseworlds is 368 pages, which is nice, thick softcover, but both of the Justice League are 424 pages and 432 pages, respectively. But the Batman, if you only get one of them, probably the best deal is the Batman Elseworlds Volume 1. It is 536 pages. They're all the same price. Obviously, you should only buy what interests you, but I think these are worth picking up. And there's a lot of great creators on some of these books, from Norm Breyfogle to Aaron Lopresti and Ty Templeton and Dave Gibbons, J.M. DeMatteis, Howard Chaykin, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, Gil Kane. Just some great, great creators and some great, great stories all collected in 2024 trade paperback editions. That is my pick this month from the DC Connect. On to the next one.
This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog on page 61. It's Brave and the Bold, Volume 1, Lords of Luck, 2024 edition. So this series was originally from 2007, and it ran for 35 issues, and it was kind of a resurrection of the classic Brave and the Bold series, except this time it wasn't Batman and another hero or villain. Actually, the first story arc that this one involves does have Batman, and it's basically Batman and Hal Jordan Green Lantern teaming up, and then they run into several people along the way. So it's a very good series. Like this first volume, they're looking for the Book of Destiny. And so they run into, in the first, like, I think this collects, yeah, issues 1 through 6. They run into Supergirl, who at that time had just recently been connected to the Legion of Superheroes, Lobo, Blue Beetle, Adam Strange, Challengers of the Unknown. And then later on, I think the last few issues, they do run into the Legion of Superheroes as well at the conclusion of it. So I don't know if they're going to reprint this series or not. I do have this particular trade, but it is a really fun series. And like Brave and the Bold was what's such a nice series, because it would bring people in because Batman was on the cover, but it also would have another, you know, character from the DC universe that he would be teaming up with, that you could get to know a little bit more about with their personality and things like that. So definitely recommend this if you like team up book.
Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the previews catalog, and I'm over in the image section. I'm on page 164, and there's actually a few things in the image section which I was going to call out, but the first one is called The Domain, and the writer is Chip Zdarsky, and the artist and cover art is Rachel Stott. And I found this interesting and also a little bit like a story I might have read before. Okay, it says it's a miniseries because it says miniseries premiere. When three best friends discover a crashed UFO, they also discover technology that gives them incredible abilities. But there's a catch. Only one of them can use the powers at a time. Can their friendship survive the powers' temptation? In the pages of Image's Eisner-winning series Public Domain, Sid Dallas and the team at Dallas Comics reimagined their classic character, The Domain, for a new audience. And this is that comic. So it's a reimagined comic. This special series, written by Chip Zdarsky, with amazing art by Rachel Stott and Aaron Angelini, I guess that it is a classic superhero story for those coming in fresh and a fun meta story for readers of Public Domain. I can't remember, but I think I'm almost positive John read Public Domain, and I think he enjoyed it, and I had skipped it, so I didn't read it, but I'm going to pick up The Domain based on him enjoying Public Domain. And the thing that was funny that made me remind me of something else I read that series by Mark Millar. It was at Image. Now it's being, new volumes are being released at Dark Horse, and that's The Ambassadors. The Ambassadors had the same type of a pitch. It's a little bit different. Instead of only one character getting the superpowers, it was a set of superpowers that was housed and almost could be downloaded into a person, and you could download 2, 3, 4 different powers. But if I downloaded the, and I'm just making these up, the heat vision power, or if I downloaded the healing factor power, my friend who's also on the team over there, he can't have them. Only one person can have that power set. So literally you had the whole array of power sets, but only one person could have each one of those things. And usually they didn't set it up where one person had all of them. I think they were limited to, they could have 3 at a time. But, you know, you had multiple people with each of them with 3 powers, you get the whole array. And then it's all about teamwork and stuff like that. But this just kind of reminded me of that. But because of the Public Domain thing that I skipped, which John read and he enjoyed, I'm going to pick up The Domain. And hopefully it makes sense for me because I never read Public Domain. And on to my next pick.
Dr. Mo here with an Image pick. For the preview spotlight episode, it's The Domain, number 1. Chip Zdarsky is finally returning to his Public Domain universe, as it was. For those of you who are not familiar with Public Domain, it is Zdarsky's book about a superhero comics creator, Sid Dallas, and as part of the series, it's about him creating comics, and it's about the backstory about owning the property and so forth. But The Domain is what I'd like to call a comic within a comic. The Domain is the comic book that the character Sid Dallas has been reimagining in Public Domain. Now, the logline for The Domain is 3 best friends discover a crashed UFO. The technology gives them superpowers. There's only one catch. Only one of them can use the powers at a time. Very similar. I mean, you've got bits of Green Lantern in this. You've got bits in this log line of even Shazam or in this. And since I'm a Legion of Superheroes fan, I'm just going to throw that out there. It's like a little bit of Ultra Boy here as well. But anyway, it sounds, The Domain sounds like the basic premise or the basic building blocks of a classic type of superhero title. Now, one thing is that Chip Zdarsky, I would not call him a classic superhero writer by any stretch of the imagination. He certainly likes to play with the superhero toys, whether it's Daredevil, whether it's Batman. He likes to break them. He likes to invert things. So I suspect there will be some sort of twist with The Domain at some point in the story. Now, the artwork for this is being provided by Rachel Stott. Rachel Stott has worked on the Fantastic Four, has done a lot of Doctor Who work as well. I'm curious about this because, one, it's a 5-issue miniseries, so the way I see it, it is a low commitment. The other thing is it ties in to Zdarsky's Domain series, so if I feel like I want to get the full experience of reading Domain, I need to jump on board this title, The Domain, number 1 of 5, can be found on page 164 of the July issue of the Previews catalog.
Next up, I am also going to be getting the domain number 1 of 5 on page 11 of the Image catalog. Now, I know the other guys were mentioning where it was in the Previews catalog and stuff. I'm trying to organize this stuff, if a publisher has its own catalog, to just highlight it there, because otherwise some people are going to have it listed in Previews, some are going to have it listed in the Next Phase catalog, some will have it in the Image catalog, and I think that's just confusing. Anyways, I'm kind of curious about this. I really enjoyed the Public Domain miniseries when it started. I'm glad we're getting more of that, which is just a couple more pages down this catalog. And I'm really curious about the comic inside the comic approach, and I'm hoping what we see here are the pages we see kind of hidden in the other pages of Public Domain and whatnot, and we get kind of the story behind the story. So it could be very interesting. I think Chip Zdarsky is doing some fun stuff with Public Domain, and again, this is a little meta, but in kind of, I think, the right ways, but we'll find out. Anyways, that's the domain number 1 of 5 on page 11 of the Image catalog.
Dr. Mo here with an Image pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Free Agents, number 1. The new Kurt Busiek and Fabian Nicieza title has finally arrived. I recall learning about Free Agents during the last issue of Kurt Busiek's Astro City, the one-shot special. There was a ad or placement referencing this title. That was like probably, what, a year and a half ago? But anyway, the title has arrived. It reads really much like a throwback superhero series for the 80s or 90s, big characters doing galactic things. The log line is, they fought every day of their existence and won a terrible victory. Now they're stranded on Earth, free agents for the first time, but when relics from their long war appear, threatening their chance at better lives, their greatest battle begins. They fought for 1 million planets. Can they fight to save their own souls? So there's a lot of leeway here with a log line like that. And I think we're certainly going to get some character insights. Kurt Busiek is a true master of doing these spotlight episodes, really digging into a character's background and motivation. I think Fabian excels at dialogue. He excels at putting together complicated plots. So I think that this combo is really going to be killer. The artwork is by Stephen Mooney, is the listed as the regular artist. Mooney, I think, in my opinion, based on previous work, he's done some spy series and so forth for Image. He did some work with IDW, I believe it was Half Past Danger as well. It very much is a what I would consider like a classic 80s, 90s, early 2000s look. So you're thinking your Mark Bagley's, you think your Tom Grumman's, those types of artists. I think that if you are looking for, I would say, more or less a classic superhero title that deals with some intergalactic themes, I would certainly give this a try. I'm certainly giving it a try based on the strength of Kurt Busiek and Fabian Nicieza. And it, you know, I've really enjoyed Busiek's Astro City when it comes out. Certainly his work on the Marvels, Avengers JLA, the list can go on. For Fabian, you know, when I think about Fabian, I'm thinking his X-Force run. I'm thinking his work on X-Men. I'm thinking the New Warriors. I think I'm actually thinking about when he picked up the baton from Kurt Busiek on the Thunderbolts. I think that title right there, if you want to see the two of them, how the two of them can work in concert, it's Kurt Busiek starting the Thunderbolts, leaving it, and then Fabian picking up the baton. That was a great transition. The two of us actually worked together. There was a Thunderbolts Avengers miniseries that was drawn by Tom Grummet that the pair co-wrote as well. So if you're kind of curious about what you're going to get in terms of the writing I would probably go look at that miniseries just to get a taste. Now, this first issue of Free Agents is going to have a number of covers. Obviously, we're going to get one by Stephen Mooney. There's going to be a Kevin Maguire cover. It focuses on one of the characters. I believe it's Chalice. Eric Larson's doing a cover. Pete Woods is doing a cover. Now, the kicker about this, if you're willing to sample this, is that it's going to be a 48-page number one issue, but only costs $3.99. So it's clear that Busick and Fabian and Mooney want to provide enough runway to get this plane off the ground. At the same time, they want readers to try this title out. Free Agents, number one, which costs $3.99, is considered an ongoing series, can be found on page 164 of Previews. Dr. Mo here with an image pick for the Previews Spotlight episode. It's Public Domain, number 6. Chip Zdarsky's Eisner, not that nominated and Eisner winning best new series, is finally back for a new arc. For those of you who may recall, Public Domain, which was originally released by Substack in installments, then published through Image back in 2022, finally comes out with a second installment. I guess Chip Zdarsky has been, you know, really busy with Batman and winding down Daredevil and his other Image series, New Bird. So, you know, he finally gets around to do that. But to be fair, it is one, Zdarsky is not only writing it, but he's also drawing it as well. And I can only imagine that given that Public Domain is a meta commentary on the life of a comic creator, comic book culture, these corporations that own comic book companies, it probably takes a lot to either, one, come up with the storylines, and two, do the references and the drawings and so forth. But you know what? I'm just glad it's back. I'm looking forward to seeing the next installment. So if you didn't, or if you don't recall, the first story arc of Public Domain involved an artist named Sid Dallas discovering that a comic book character that he had worked on, he had co-created, was, you know, there was a new movie coming out. Turns out that Sid Dallas still had a stake in that character. A deal was struck. Sid Dallas actually has the rights to produce comic books based on the character. We're off to the races. Now, the second Circus Story arc, based on the description, involves, you know, Sid working on a new comic, the Domain, which I actually released another clip talking about that title. The Domain is a 5-part miniseries, also written by Chip, but drawn by Rachel Stott, which details the adventures of this character book in which the adventures of these characters in the comic book in which Sid Dallas is working on in Public Domain. Confused yet? Perhaps. It's a story within a story. Part of the interest I have in Public Domain is it's not only about the meta commentary, but you're also learning about Sid Dallas's family life as well. The impact of him being a comic book writer and artist on his family, his sons, his wife. I really think that it's a slice of life title, but it also touches upon like a field that I'm really interested in, which is superhero comics. Public Domain number 6 can be found on page 173 of Previews.
Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the Image section. And by the way, just so you know, they do have a new number one coming out called Free Agents. It's by Kurt Busiek. I'm probably going to pick that up, but I didn't want to have too many clips. So I skipped ahead to something that I know I like and a lot of people don't record on. And on page 165, we actually get a hardcover. It is 208 pages, $30.29.99 before my discount through Deep Discount Comics. And it is the Department of Truth Wild Fictions hardcover. And I'm like, okay, what is this? When I saw Wild Fictions, I have the hardcover to Department of Truth hardcover volume 1. The issues started coming out again miraculously after being gone for like a year and a half. Once again, James Tynion is the writer, Martin Simmons is the artist. But it says, some fictions manifest in reality as dangerous half-formed things. The Department of Truth relies on hunters to track down and contain these wild tulpas before they become too real. And these case files from the Department of Truth field office discover the truths, hoaxes, and lore of some of the most dangerous cryptids the Rangers have ever cataloged. Designed as an in-world reports on beings like Mothman, Bigfoot, the Flatwoods Monster, and more, each entry features stunning art from some of the most renowned illustrators, which means it won't be all Burnt Simmons, I'm assuming. Comics including James Stokoe, Bill Sienkiewicz, Yuko Shimizu, Eric Henderson, Department of Truth co-creator Martin Simmons, and more. Collects the Department of Truth Wild Fictions entries, as well as exclusive additional materials from the acclaimed series by Moulter Eisner, award-winning writer James Tynion, and acclaimed artist Martin Simmons. So this is all the little spin-off type things that were printed up at the back and some things that came out. And I'm just such a big fan of this whole book. I thought it was fantastic that I'm on board for this, and I'm going to pick it up. And when they come out with Volume 2 hardcover, I'll pick that up. Just fantastic material. I saw this, piqued my interest. On to my next pick.
Hi, this is Marvin, and I'm on page 166 of the main previews catalog, and I am here to call out Fatal Compendium Trade Paperback. This is in the Image section. I know they have their own catalog, but I tend to look at the previews catalog first. Found it here, recording a clip. What we have is a 24-issue series that's been collected into one trade paperback for the first time. There are a few collections out there in hardcover, volumes 1 and volume 2, that you can grab. And there's also a five issues of trade paperbacks that you can get to get the whole series. But this is the first time it's all been collected in one place under one cover. And I don't have any of it. I never read it. This ran back in 2012 through 2014, and I did not read it at that time. So this is a great option for me to get the whole series and catch up with a couple of my favorite creatives on this title. You know, I love these two dudes, and they always write great stuff, generally in the crime noir kind of a vein. This one has more mystical aspects to it. There's a Lovecraftian vibe, and I don't know, it looks like a good time. Here, let me read this. The best-selling award-winning team of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips finally collect their hit book, Fatal, under one cover in this gorgeous compendium edition. Josephine is cursed, and in a series that darkly blends American crime noir with unnamed Lovecraftian horrors, we follow her from 1950s San Francisco, where crooked cops hide deeper evils, to mid-70s LA, where burnt-out actors and ex-cult groupies are caught in a web around a satanic snuff film, then back through the ages of time, and in the middle of it all is Josephine, with the power to die or kill for. $59.99, 800 pages, full cover. Full color. I don't know. Sounds like a good time to me. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to read it, so this is a great way for me to get caught up on this series. So I'm going to check it out. Maybe you will too. Hey, maybe it could be a topic for a book club someday. Just going to do a little book club promotion while I'm at it. If you guys haven't checked it out, go over to the Slack channel, click into the book club, see what we're reading, come join us. Even if you haven't read it, you can join us. It's a nice hangout. We only get together every couple weeks or so. So check it out if you get a chance.
Brawlinator again. You might miss this if you don't go slowly through previews, which is always a good idea to go through more than once. I think John Mayo has said that he does that. He goes through a couple times, if not three. But on page 168, there's a little book called Super Dinosaur Compendium. It's trade paperback. This is written by Robert Kirkman, and this collects the entire series in one volume for the very first time. It's a soft cover. It's 496 pages. It's full color. It's $34.99. If you read any of the Super Dinosaur and Derek Dynamo stories about the 9-foot-tall Tyrannosaurus Rex who loves to play video games, this is going to be the first full collection. I think it's never been collected before. This is Jason Howard, Robert Kirkman. It's basically a buddy story. Good for readers of all ages and species, they say here. It collects Super Dinosaur 1 through 23 and Super Dinosaur Origin Special number 1. Now, I enjoyed his Wolfman series. It had a lot of the same style artwork, but it certainly was not all ages, I can assure you. But if you're looking for some more Robert Kirkman content and you never picked this up, hey, I suggest you pick it up. It is on page 168, Super Dinosaur Compendium trade paperback on page 168, right down the center in the gutter of the previews catalog.
This is Nick with a pick from the Image previews catalog. Now, I think this is also in the main catalog. I don't have that one open in front of me currently, but I'm looking at Ice Cream Man number 41. The title for this issue is Spy Story. W. Maxwell Prince and Martine Marazzo are taking on the 007 story here. We'll see where that goes. The cover, of course, has the Ice Cream Man pointing his ice cream cone through the barrel of a gun at the, you know, from the viewer's perspective. And again, 32 pages. It's the anthology format. Only tagline we get here is a Who Can You Trust thriller, both shaken and stirred. $33.99 on sale July 24th.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the Marvel previews. And this is the kickoff of a lot of new things. We get a lot of new number ones. And the reason why is, one, it's summertime. And so with summertime, new number ones are definitely happening and events happen, stuff like that. By the way, they are kind of polishing off the event Blood Hunt in this previews. But the thing that's kicking off is the relaunch of the post-Krakoa X-Books. I am interested in this. I am going to probably dabble and sample most of the books, if not all, most of the books I will. Every now and then they'll come out with something that I'm just like, I'm good with not reading that. But this first number one on page two is X-Men. X-Men number one, written by Jed McKay, art by Ryan Stegman. And it just says, From the Ashes in real big red, a new beginning. I'm on board for this. Jed McKay, it was so funny because the last few issues of Avengers, I didn't think his Avengers, it was decent, but it wasn't great. But then I really got interested in it when he started tying into the Fall of X stuff, when the Avengers finally started seeing and recognizing what's going on in the X world and Orcus, you know, how did they just stand aside and let this all happen? And so when they were involved in that title, I think the book got a lot more interesting. And I think it's because Jed McKay was ramping up preparing for his X-Men number one. And so that was a very good read, all the stuff. I literally just finished reading Avengers number 13 at the time that I'm recording this previous clip. But it says, Krakoa is gone. Yes, it is. Orcus has fallen. Ah, spoiler. No, I think we all kind of knew that was going to happen. But the X-Men remain always. Cyclops leads because that is what he does, which I'm cool with that. Cyclops the leader. Beast builds because that is what he does. And Beast had a redemption story that kind of happened because Beast had been taken for a ride and it was not the Beast that we all recognized. And from their new home in Alaska, so they're going to Alaska. Okay, that's weird. The X-Men raise a flag of defiance. All right. Mutant business is their business. Join Cyclops, Beast, Magneto, Psylocke, Kid Omega, Temper, Magic, and Juggernaut. So that is our X-Men, which means we are not going to have Professor X in this book. We're not going to have quite a few characters, but we do have a lot of characters we do know, some that you know but are typically not used. This is a very different X team than I would have expected. And I'm on board for it. Let's see where it goes. Let's see if some characters are missing for a reason, because we don't know how it all plays out and who is with us in the future. We don't know how things played out. So I'm on board. X-Men number one, on to my next pick. Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel previews. And this one is going to be my dumb summer fun book, similar to Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. I think this book will be in that same vein. It is on page 14 of the Marvel previews. It is Aliens versus Avengers, number 1-4. So it's a miniseries. You're not in for too much. And the creative team is just fantastic. You have Jonathan Hickman as the writer, and you have Esad Ribic as the artist. And this just looks great. I'm looking at the cover art. I'm looking at some of the interior. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. And it says, Aliens and Avengers face off. I don't know how much I need to expound on this. My guess is the aliens are going to get their behinds kicked because it's the Avengers. Come on, guys. We had Colonial Marines who put up a good fight. These are guys with superpowers, so I think they'll be able to take out the aliens. Just my guess. But we'll see. We'll see how they give the aliens a fighting chance. And it says, it's all led to this. Xenomorphs reach Earth, which will be cool. So the Avengers are saving Earth people. The perfect organism meets a planet of superhumans. Who will be the first to fall? Legendary collaborators Jonathan Hickman and Assad Ribic cut loose in this four-part epic unmissable for Marvel and Alien fans alike. The bad news is it's 48 pages and it's $7.99, $8. But this looks like dumb fun for me. I'm going to read it. I'm going to check it out. I'm a big Jonathan Hickman fan. On to my next pick.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here, and we're in the Marvels previews. And I'm sure a lot of people are calling this out, but I'm going to call it out too, and I am going to give you page and everything. So we're on page 14 in the printed preview, Aliens vs. Avengers, number 1 of 4. Jonathan Hickman's the writer. Esad Ribic is the artist and color artist. There's a Scotty Young variant. There's a Mark Brooks variant. There's a Virgin variant, Mark Brooks. And there's a homage variant by John Tyler Christopher. Aliens and Avengers face off. It's all led to this. Xenomorphs reach Earth. The perfect organism meets the planet of superhumans. Who will be the first to fall? Legendary collaborators Jonathan Hickman and Esad Ribic cut loose in their four-part epic, unmissable for Marvel and Aliens fans alike. 48 pages, $7.99. Killing us on these pricing. But I'm definitely going to pick up all four, and then I'll pick up the trade, because who knows how long Disney is going to own 20th Century Studios with Aliens, with Predator, and these might go away, you know, in the next couple of years, because they're having problems with money. Surprise, surprise. And comic book community is not doing the best right now. So definitely get this. I would love to see this, like Wolverine versus Predator. Well, Predator killed a couple people. That was like awesome. So Aliens versus Avengers sounds amazing. I hope they throw in a Hulk. We'll see him smash some Xenomorphs and maybe go against the Queen or something. That would be awesome. But I guess we'll see. Jonathan Hickman is a good writer. So on to the next pick. What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick, and I am back, and I'm still in the Marvel previews. Are you guys tired of all this Blood Hunt stuff yet? By the time this previews ends, it should be kind of close to ending. I just read the Free Comic Book Day and number one, the bloody one, the Red Band edition. That was actually an interesting story. One of the stars turns into a heel or a villain. Sorry, I was recently looking up wrestling stuff. So I'm on page 31. I am looking at Hulk, the Blood Hunt number one. I am a huge fan of Hulk, and this cover looks amazing. So Philip Kennedy Johnson and Danny Earls and Joshua Cassara is this cover here. I'm definitely going to pick this up. And with the little bit I did read, I'm going to continue to stay on the main Blood Hunt books and only pick up like this Hulk one. If I hear there's another cool one, I may pick it up, but I'm not going deep into it. If it runs into the runs I read, like Spider-Man, if it's in Spider-Man, obviously I'll grab it and read it. But so what lies beneath? Hulk and Banner's quest to save Charlie's soul leads them through the old west town of Old Tucson, population of one. But the last man in town has a heck of a story to tell. Before the night ends, Hulk and Banner will learn there's a lot more than meets the eye in the Old Tucson, and there's a lot more under the desert floor than either of them ever could have guessed. Don't miss this spine-chilling chapter of the Blood Hunt event. 40 pages, $4.99. Again, this Hulk cover is amazing. There's a couple more, obviously, because, you know, you can't just get one cover with Marvel. So, on to the next pick.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel previews. And once again, I'm leaving out the big books. The Omnibuy, which I usually call out, which I probably will be picking some. But the one that I'm going to be calling out is on page 38. We have a new number one. And this one, I'm a little bit looking forward to, a little bit worried. So it says, Namor, number 1 of 8. It's an 8-issue miniseries written by Jason Aaron, who is doing work at DC and at Marvel. And Paul Davidson and Alec Lins do the art on this. Namor can be written well. It can work for me depending on who is writing it. Just like Jason Aaron, he can write well, he can write not so well, depending on what he's doing. It says, Last King of Atlantis. Now, I'm going to read you the solicit on this, and I'll tell you why I'm walking into this a little bit of trepidation. It says, War rages beneath the waves, from the lost cities of the secret seas to the fathomless depths where the elder whales reign. Seven kings, old and new, fight to rule the watery realm. But where is Namor, the once mighty submariner? He's sitting behind bars on the surface, with no intention of ever setting foot in the seas again. Interesting. So begins an oversized Atlantean event that will forever reshape the landscape of the undersea world, while at last laying bare the dark history of Atlantis and its fiercest, most infamous defender. That all sounds cool. Why is he locked up? Don't know. We'll figure it out. But this part gives me the trepidation. This last sentence on here worries me a little bit. This could be not good, because they gave Jason a lot of leeway when it came to Punisher. It says, an epic that will redefine the King of the Seas in the manner of Jason Aaron's Punisher series. All right, I think Jason Aaron went a little too far with this Punisher series, actually a lot too far. I think he was given free rein to essentially transform the character and destroy the character, which was unfortunate. They came out with a new Punisher, which was a new character, and it did not work for me. It was okay, but it's like they rebuilt the Punisher. Why are we getting rid of Frank Castle? It made no sense. It was just a rehash of the same stuff. And I found it a little disrespectful if that's all we were going to do. I thought it was the trademark of the skull, which is why we had to do something different, because we couldn't put a trademark on a skull. No, that appears not to be the thing. Frank Castle's the problem. Why? I don't know. So anyways, he's going to transform him in the manner that he did the Punisher. I want to see where he goes with this, and it could definitely change my opinion of Jason Aaron moving forward. We'll see. And on to my next pick.
This is Nick with a pick from the Marvel previews catalog. It is on page 69. Now, I'm going out on a limb here, and this is purely based on the cover of this comic book as it is solicited here. So I really hope that this is the final design. It is The Incredible Hulk number 14, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, but the art and the cover here are by Nick Klein, who always does a great job. But we've got this, I don't even know what to describe the coloring, but it looks almost sort of like a blacklight poster or something going on, with Hulk busting out in this crazy, like, Skeletor-looking type of thing in the background. And it says, as Banner struggles to escape the terrifying mindscape in which Hulk keeps him prisoner, Charlie's soul is trapped inside a nightmare of her own, and she'll need both Hulk and Banner if she has any hope of escape. Meanwhile, the mysterious eldest is watching Hulk's every move as her plan to free the Mother of Horrors takes shape. And we get a glimpse of just how far back her grudge against the Hulk goes. This is 32 pages, $3.99. I'm willing to jump in for this issue, see where it happens to be going. I figure there are probably already, you know, three or four story arcs in at this point. But anybody been reading this one? Kind of curious what the series has been like so far. As I mentioned, this is issue 14, so probably been going for about a year now.
Brawlinator again. I am now in the Marvel supplemental previews along with everybody else for the month of May. And in the last solicitation that I read, I was talking about DC's Elseworlds being sort of the DC version of Marvel's What If. Well, it just so happens that over on page 92, here in the Marvel Collected Edition section, it's What If Into the Multiverse Omnibus Volume 2. And it's got a great Valentino cover for the direct market and a really great Brian Hitch cover by Wolverine, who's just gone berserk on the X-Men with Alpha Flight standing behind him. This has got some of the greatest Marvel creators in the modern era with Ann Nesenti, Jim Valentino, Ron Mars, Kurt Busiek, Dan Slott, Chuck Dixon, with just all kinds of stories here. What if Rogue possessed the power of Thor? What if Galactus came to consume the Earth, but instead of the Fantastic Four standing in his way, what if it had been the Avengers? What if Spider-Man had never lost his four extra arms? What if the Hulk had ended up killing Wolverine? What if Barbara Ketch had become the Ghost Rider, or Iron Man goes public, which of course he did. I believe it was in Iron Man 2. It's 1,096 pages, so it's one of the bigger Marvel Omnis, but this is Volume 2, so if you picked up What If Into the Multiverse Omnibus Volume 1, which I think all these stories were from Volume 2 of the monthly series What If, I think it was monthly, it might have been bi-monthly, but I want to say it was a monthly series, the second volume. So check this out. It is over on page 92 of the Marvel Preview Supplemental. It is What If Into the Multiverse Omnibus Volume 2 Hardcover.
This is Nick with a pick from the Marvel Previews catalog. It is on page 102, looks like. It is the Avengers Twilight trade paperback collection. And I'm not even sure if the main series or mini series is finished yet, but I've heard a lot of good talk about it, and I've been trying to avoid a lot of the discussions about what is going on in the issues. But I gather that it's sort of a Kingdom Come style series, sort of looking at what do the Avengers mean to the world by looking at their absence. And the solicitation here gives me some of those same vibes. It's at 200 pages, $29.99, written by Chip Zdarsky and penciled here by Daniel Acuna. And I think I've heard that this is a project that they've been working on for like the last 7 or 8 years as a labor of love type of thing. So I'm anxious to see what it looks like here in one chunk. The solicitation says, a thrillingly dark new vision of the Avengers. In a gleaming world of prosperity, Captain America is no more. But Steve Rogers still exists, floating through an America where freedom is an illusion. The Avengers are strangers, and his friends are long dead. But is the dream itself dead? And how do you assemble Avengers in a world that doesn't want them? With the clock ticking down to New Year's Day, Steve must build an army to save America. Will his surviving friends sign up, or will he have to lead the ragtag group called the Defenders against the expert military marksman known as Bullseye? And can Steve infiltrate the Raft, a government facility full of secrets and danger off the shores of New York City, before the new Iron Man sentences him to the same gruesome fate as Tony Stark? Yikes, sounds scary. Check it out in September.
Brawlinator again, now on page 109 of the Marvel supplemental, and man, I am such a fan of the original Planet of the Apes movies. That original screenplay was written by the great Rod Serling of Twilight Zone fame, and what a fantastic story it was. I don't think I'll ever forget how shocked I was at the ending to the first Planet of the Apes. And, you know, we've lost so much of that now because it's, you know, it's like a trope. It's sort of, that's been spoiled. And, you know, the later movies kind of varied in quality for me. I think I liked part 4 right after the first one, and then I liked part 3 after that, and then I liked part 2 after that, and really the fifth one was terrible. And I did really like the new Matt Reeves trilogy that he did. I'm kind of excited to see what Disney's going to do with the Fox property with their Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. But none of these, the new stuff, and particularly not the Tim Burton remake. Boy, the less said about that, the better. But this is, Marvel did a series, a limited series called Beware the Planet of the Apes recently, which I'm getting the final issue of. So I can't really say how this ends. I haven't finished the series yet, but I'm thinking that if you have not been picking it up, I feel like this is going to stick the landing really well. This is a new story set in the classic continuity of that original Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes films, and it's Cornelius and Dr. Zira. They're the only apes alive who see a value in the human race. Now, this is a prequel to that 1968 film starring Charlton Heston. And this is, it's very good what I've been reading. It was a 4-issue limited series written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Alvaro Lopez. And it basically sets up the Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes movie. Now, I'm hoping they stay in this timeline and do some stories afterwards or maybe in between the movies. I think that would be a fantastic idea. But like I said, this really scratches an itch for me. I'm a big fan of the original series and its continuity. And I really hope that Marvel can maintain the same quality as this with future projects based in this continuity. Check it out for yourself. Like I said, it's on page 109 at the back of the Marvel Previews catalog. It is Beware the Planet of the Apes trade paperback. It's only $15.99, 112 pages. If you like the original Planet of the Apes, I think you're going to enjoy this.
Next up, once again, I find myself on page 127 of the Marvel Previews, in what I hope is not going to be a regular clip for me every month. But this is the Marvel checklist page. And again, I urge you to take a look at it, because this month they were hiding a couple of more things on it. We're still at that point where Marvel's catalog and order form aren't syncing up. So I really do recommend go through the Marvel previews. Be making your kind of list of, oh, I want to get this, I want to get this, I want to get that. Write that down when you get to this page with the Marvel checklist. Just start at the top of this page of what they've got on the various FOC lists and stuff, and check stuff off your list. And as you hit something that is on this page and isn't on your list, well, draw a line, add it at the bottom, and know that you've got to go look for that on the order form. Maybe it'll be there, maybe it won't. I don't know these days, which in and of itself is just kind of driving me nuts. I like a nice orderly universe and order form and stuff like that. But that's not the world we live in these days. So again, sometimes they hide some stuff in here that you're going to miss otherwise. For example, I don't recall seeing the Venom War in this catalog. But I'll be honest, I wasn't looking for it. I haven't been getting Venom stuff for a while. But I know when I hit this page, I had a couple of things I added to my list that I didn't see earlier in the catalog. So, your mileage may vary, and maybe you're not going to have any issues with that, but it's always good to double-check this list at the end and see if there's something that next month is going to say, hey, use this month's order code, because that's happening more often than not. So, once again, these are the edge cases, things that could otherwise fall through the cracks if you're not careful. So, I recommend checking out the Marvel checklist this month on page 127 of the Marvel previews.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the main previews catalog, and I'm in the boom section, and you get these big red text boxes on page 52 and 53 talking about all these great creators, and over to page 54 where the actual solicit is, and it is Hello Darkness number one. It is a gem of the month written by, okay, now I'm going to have to explain this, Garth Ennis, James Tynion, Brian Azzarello et al., illustrated by Becky Cloonan, Weather Del Adera, Vanessa R. Del Rey, et al. Yeah, this is an anthology. It's an ongoing anthology. Oh, man. It says, it's $5.99, $6, 48 pages. And it is a horror anthology. I'm a fan of horror when it's done well. I'm a big fan of James Tynion's horror specifically. Garth Ennis on horror is good, not great, but I've read some of his horror. Brian Azzarello can be decent, and anthologies typically I hate, and so I'm going to be a little bit of a hypocrite and say I'm going to pick up an anthology and hope for the best, and I will read you the solicit here. It says, horror fans rejoice in cadaverous delight because Hello Darkness is a brand new monthly anthology series featuring what Boom Studios is known for, the best in modern horror, fantasy, and mystery, not to mention the darkest stories yet from an all-star cast of creators. With spine-tingling lineup of industry legends like Garth Ennis, Becky Cloonan, and James Tynion, it just lists the same people that I read. Also, Ryan Sook. That's the only name. Oh, and Jenner Cootie. Okay, so we got two new names. Everything from primal fears to modern political horrors will be awakened in the classic style of creepy and eerie, which creepy and eerie were enjoyable. I've had issues of those. They are fun. And contemporary chills of Black Mirror, and I am a fan of Black Mirror. So really, I'm going to cross my fingers and hope that most of the stories work for me. If it doesn't, I'll be easily off this book. But it caught my eye. I'm a fan of horror. I'm going to try it out onto my next pick.
Hello, this is Marvin, and I'm in the front of the book, front of the previous catalog, on page 54. I'm looking at something called Hello Darkness, which is a horror anthology title. Hello Darkness number one, the first issue being solicited in this catalog. Yet a tremendous number of writers and illustrators listed, all of which are names you would recognize immediately. It's a $5.99 book for 48 pages. And, you see Garth Ennis, James Tynion, Brian Azzarello, Becky Cloonan, Werther Del Adera. I never know how to say that. And there's an awesome Jenny Frizzin cover. Now, I know horror is not for everybody. I know anthologies aren't for everybody, but that's what this is. This is a horror anthology. And my only real hesitance in picking this up is that if you jump all the way to the back of the book, and I'm not recording a clip on this other thing, or maybe I am, we'll see. If you go to page 396, you have Epitaphs from the Abyss, number one, which is another horror anthology. And that one's from Oni, and it's reviving the EC brand. So that sounds pretty exciting, too. Do I need two horror anthology titles? I probably don't. Probably don't. I got a lot of books coming. I don't think I need both of those. So I'm going to have to make a call and go with one or the other. Right now, it looks like Hello Darkness is winning, largely because I love Jimmy Frison, and this is a dope cover. I don't know. Maybe I'll pick up the first issue of both pair. I do think it's interesting. We have Brian Azzarello on Hello Darkness number one. We have Brian Azzarello on Epitaphs from the Abyss number one. Maybe I should get them both just to compare the Brian Azzarello stories and rank them. I'll make up any excuse to buy a comic book, you know? But I'm going to definitely check out Hello Darkness. Even though it's the more expensive book, you're getting $5.99 for 48 pages over here, or Epitaphs from the Abyss, $4.99 for 40 pages. Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Oh, they have a foil cover, too, on the Epitaphs. Okay, I'm not... Clip isn't about that. The clip is about Hello Darkness, Marvin. Focus. Yeah, I'm going to definitely check this out. You should, too. Boom puts out good stuff. Nobody on here is a schlub, so do it. Get this? Let's talk about it. I failed. I failed you guys in my initial recording of this clip because I forgot to mention an important aspect of Hello Darkness, which is that there's a Something is Killing the Children story running through this. And if you're a fan of that, you may want to get this to be all-inclusive. I'm sure it'll be collected again at some point. But if you're trying to get that original version of it, this is where you would get it. It's a six-part story in the first six issues. So if you're about Something is Killing the Children, you may want to jump on board with this too. Sorry, I meant to talk about that in my main clip.
Jason again with my next pick, this time in the previews catalog on page 74 from Boom Studios. It's Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal Archive Edition, 1 of 3. It says the original comic adaptation of The Dark Crystal returns. The classic 1983 single issue adaptation of The Dark Crystal from writer David Anthony Kraft and artists Brett Blevins and Vince Coletta is lovingly restored and represented as part of Boom Studios' Archive Edition line. 1,000 years ago, the planet Thra, two races appeared when a shard was shattered from the Crystal of Truth. The cruel Skeksis, who used controlled corruption of the crystal to extend their lives, and the gentle Uru, more commonly known as mystics, who make their home in the Valley of Stones to await their destiny. A young orphaned Gelfling named Jin must flee from capture, being Thra's only hope, but enemies aren't all he'll find in the wild. So I enjoyed this movie when it first came out as a child. Very, very fun movie, mystical and just fantastical creatures like I had never seen before. And Jim Henson was so good at puppetry, and it's definitely some nightmare fuel for a little kid for some of the bad guys, but very fun and engaging film. And then this reprints a Marvel comic that covered the entire Dark Crystal movie in one comic book. So I'm not sure what issues 2 and 3 will be about, because this pretty much covers the entire issue as far as I know. So anyway, looking forward to this. If you like that movie at all, or Jim Henson, or if you've ever gotten into any of the Dark Crystal mythology, I highly recommend this book.
My next pick is on page 95 of the Diamond Previews, and it is Thundercats Chitara number 1. This is a mini-series focusing on Chitara, but what I find even more interesting, although she's a great character and stuff, is that this is going to take place on Thundera before its destruction. I don't know how much we have ever seen of Thundera itself, because most of it takes place on Third Earth after the destruction of Thundera, which in and of itself is kind of bizarre. If you've got Thundera, which presumably is their home planet, they go to a new place. Why do they call it Third Earth? Shouldn't it be like Second Thundera or something? Anyways, we're getting a solo series of her. I think she's a fun character. She's kind of the speedster of the group. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm really hoping Dynamite does some good stuff, not only with her, but also exploring some of the other Thundercats down the line. I'd like to see some of the second stringers that were introduced in like the later half of the original cartoon run, because I thought those were pretty interesting characters too. But once again, that's Thundercats Chitara number 1 on page 95 of the Diamond Previews.
This is Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 127. It's The Adventures of Red Sonja Omnibus, trade paperback this time. The defining saga of the She-Devil with a sword. So this one is a reprint of the Marvel, you know, the classic Marvel years. It has Marvel feature issues 1-7, which was Red Sonja's first ongoing series. Red Sonja issues 1-15. And then it also like covers all of her appearances from the Savage Sword of Conan. It's all in one book. Definitely great stories here written by Roy Thomas. Most of the artwork is done by Frank Thorne, at least initially, who helped define the look of Red Sonja. But anyway, it's a lot cheaper than the $100 omnibus that came out several months back. So hopefully more people will pick this up. Like I said, this is kind of classic Bronze Age, you know, DC or Marvel comics, you know, fantasy. At this time, it did connect directly into Conan's series, which I thought was kind of interesting. So it actually, I think it was Marvel feature issue 7. It crosses over with, like, the story just continues on into Conan the Barbarian, that first series from Marvel, issue 68. And so it continues on. Because basically, you don't get the conclusion of the story at the end, just from the Red Sonja perspective. The interesting thing is on page 136, they are soliciting the Conan the Barbarian, the original comics omnibus volume 3. And that covers Conan the Barbarian issues 52-83. So once again, you're going to get part of the story on issue 68. But if you don't have the Red Sonja part of it, you can never quite complete this story. So anyway, you know, there's multiple ways to obviously to collect the Conan one, but this was a lot cheaper than the other one. It's kind of probably be more of a compendium size. So if you are a Bronze Age sword and a sorcery fan, I definitely recommend picking this up. Jason again with another pick in the previews catalog on page 142. It's Elric the Necromancer, issue 1. Looks like it's a 2-issue miniseries from Titan Comics for $3.99. It says, Elric must face an epic threat without his legendary Stormbringer. 2 years after the sack of the great city of Ymir, Elric wanders across the land as a mercenary, still grieving the death of his beloved Samoril. But a new danger is not far away. Queen Yashana has a quest for the White Wolf, a journey into another dimension where elemental magic nor the enchantment of his mighty sword, Stormbringer, seems to function. Without his powers, how will Elric face down the old threat that lingers there? So this was a series that or a character that was written by Michael Moorcock, and so they're adapting, you know, all of his either short stories or his novels, and they've adapted most of them at least once, and some of them more than once. And it looks like this one was a French comic, and so they're basically just translated into English. So I look forward to checking that out. You know, Elric is a very interesting character in the sense that he is set in a fantasy world, sword and sorcery type of world. There is a lot more magic, so it makes you think a little bit more like Dungeons and Dragons versus like, you know, a Conan world or like Lord of the Rings, for example. And his big issue is with, you know, Stormbringer. He's basically, and that's what makes this story, will make this story interesting. He's basically only powerful because of his sword, Stormbringer. Gives him strength and health, fighting prowess, but it has to be fed by souls, souls of intelligent beings like people, things like that. And so it's kind of a blessing and a curse. And so anyway, it's a very interesting series. So if you're a sword and sorcery fan, I highly recommend this. For me, I typically will pick these up in hardcover. Titan does these really nice hardcovers. They'll print out like an issue 2 or 3 issue miniseries, and then they'll come out a few months later, 6 months later, with a hardcover that has the entire story intact and complete.
Brawlinator again, and now I'm in the Titan section, and no, I'm not going to talk about Conan, other than to mention that the people who picked up Volume 3 of The Savage Sword of Conan, when Marvel was putting it out, may note that the covers offered with Titan's version of Volume 3 were not offered originally with Marvel. So it's definitely not enough for me to double dip. It's not on books that are that expensive. But a book that I do want to mention, and I bet John has probably looked at this. It's a $20 hardcover, 96 pages. It's found on page 159 in the Titan Comics section of previews. This is the Star Trek, the Illustrated Oral History with the original cast. It's the original cast and crew of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek discussing the making of the iconic show and the films in this fully illustrated collector's edition. Now, you know, it says fully illustrated, but it looks to me like it's all photography, which I'm okay with. It's a hardcover and it features interviews with William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, Nichelle Nichols, George Takei, Walter Koenig, and James Doohan. Years and years of content and exclusive new features, they're saying, and they've got it's got a cool cover on it, what looks like one of the page spreads here. You know, this might make a very interesting book to have if you're a Star Trek fan. Check it out. It's in the Titan section. It's on page 159, comes out in July. It's only $19.99.
Hey, this is James with my next pick in the previews catalog, and I'm in the Dark Horse section, where the first thing I noticed on page 224 is we have Nightclub 2, number 1. Writer, Mark Millar. Artist is Juanan Ramirez. Juanan. Okay. This was a fantastic series, Nightclub, and Mark Millar has brought all of his titles over to Dark Horse, which was a coup for Dark Horse, because they're definitely getting some heat on these books. I like it. I kind of wish Dark Horse had a little bit more of a presence in the catalog. Sometimes it's hard to find things. It's good that they're starting to get bigger. The pictures are linking up with the solicits. When they just had the solicits with no pictures, it was hard to tell what was what. But for those of you that don't know, The Nightclub is a terrific series. It's about vampires. And before you go, oh no, yuck, gross, vampires are not for me, I don't like blood, it's not that. It's vampires, teen kids, almost like the Spider-Man story. They have vampire powers, but they use it to become superheroes. And so they are the good guys. They're not disgusting. They're not gross. They're not out to just kill people. They're out to be heroes and help people out. And so they take these powers that vampires have and also the weaknesses that vampires have, and they flip the script and try to be the good guys versus the evil ghouls that they're always made out to be. So it's been a fun read. The first time series was really good. It was nice to see them in Big Game, the Mark Millar mash up with all of his series together, and I'm definitely on board for another one of these titles. Terrific stuff. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the Dark Horse section. This time I'm on the opposing page, on page 225, where we have another new number one by Mark Millar, and this one is called Prodigy, Slaves of Mars. Prodigy is a good series. By the way, the writer is Mark Millar. The artist is Stefano Landry, and it's about a character, if I'm going to have to read this, soon to be adapted for film on Netflix. So this is definitely going to be on film, and that's really cool. It did not say that about Nightclub that I did this list on before. It's basically saying someone murdered Edison Crane's father when he stumbled across the world's greatest secret, and now he's taking Edison's entire life apart. What was his father's role in NASA's secret space program, and what does it mean for all of mankind? Prodigy is a fun story for me. It's something that I've enjoyed the previous volumes. It's, once again, one of his superhero-ish type stories. So if you like Prodigy in the past, pick this up. It's about someone who has super intelligence, can get things done, super IQ, just because of the super intellect is able to parlay that into a lot of wins in life in general, and things that he does with that. But pick this one up. It's coming out. It's 32 pages. It's $4.99. By the way, I forgot to tell you the price of Nightclub. It's also 32 pages. It's $4.99. But that's become the price of comics, and I'm on board for Mark Millar. Good stuff. On to my next pick.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick, and I am in the IDW section. If you look in the hard previews book, it's on page 231. If you're looking at the online one, it's on page 2. It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 by Jason Aaron. Yes, I love my turtles. So cover A is Raphael Albuquerque. It's a green background. The turtles are grayed out with their colored bandanas. And then we have cover B, cover C, cover D, cover E, F, G, and then 125, 150, 75, 100, 250, and then a 1 in 500. 1 in 500 better have like 500 signatures or something. Like, who the hell wants to buy a 1 in 500? Sorry. Anyway, so we're going to go. Superstar writer Jason Aaron from the Mighty Thor Batman Offworld teams up with Joelle Jones. Joelle Jones is a great artist. Lady Killer, which that was a great book. She does Catwoman. For the first issue of new TMNT series that will start a bold new era celebrating TMNT's 40th anniversary while setting them up for the next 40 years to come. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have all left New York to pursue their own interests, but there are forces gathering that will pull them back together, whether the bad guys like it or not. First up, Raphael. Why is everyone's favorite brawler in prison? When a surprise attack behind bars puts Raph's position in jeopardy, he needs to figure out how to get out of jail and warn his brothers trouble is coming. This looks awesome. Cover B is actually pretty cool. You can actually see like Raphael escaping from prison. You see it looks like foot ninjas behind him. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be a different take on Ninja Turtles, and I cannot wait. So obviously, the first one's Raphael. I think the second one is Donatello. I think someone told me. But see, you got. It's going to be the first five books, it looks like, because they have, don't miss full sets from each of these top artists, 1 through 5. So you got Jay Gonzo, Danny Earls, Derek Robertson's, and Lee Bermejo. Lee Bermejo is a great artist. He's the 1 in 75 retailer incentive. And of course, you can't see the 1 in 75. I see the 1 in 50, I'm not impressed. The 1 in 250 is color changing. It's like purple instead of yellow. And yeah, so that's weird. The 1 in 100 is a Momoko, don't care for. Yeah, you don't see the 1 in 75s, and you don't see the cover D. So I might have to wait for the FOC to make sure I get the covers I want. But as of right now, definitely cover A, definitely a cover B. One of each at least, and we'll go from there. All right, on to my next pick.
Hey, this is James back with my final pick in the previews catalog. And that's because I'm getting kind of long in the tooth. I've done a lot of recordings. But this time, there's two things I'm going to point out, but I'm doing the clip on the new series. It's on pages 248 and 249. Alien Books is a publisher who has been publishing a lot of things. They recently became noticed for, they started to publish all of the Valiant books. But I was not pointing out a title from Valiant, which is the superhero universe. There's actually 4 or 5 titles that are coming out from Valiant now from Alien Books. But the one that I was going to point out, it piqued my interest. On page 248, there's a new 1 of 3, a miniseries called I, Dragon. It's by Juan Jimenez, and it looks like Jimenez, but I'm assuming it's Jimenez. And the art is by Juan Jimenez. Now, Juan Jimenez is known for the Meta Barons. He was the artist on the Meta Barons, and he is a fantastic artist. When you're looking at this cover of issue number 1 of 3, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful artist. And I was surprised to see this over at Alien Books, because this is something that you would normally see out of maybe a Humanoids, which was just shocking. It says, a fiefdom of the royal family, Rosenthal Castle, lives its darkest hours surrounded by a huge army. The leader who heads it is the something descendant. I won't say the word. It's a curse word. John doesn't like that. A curse word descendant of a lost royal line, and she has returned to reclaim her throne. A long and bloody struggle for power is about to begin. Meanwhile, inside the castle, a strange carnival woman gives birth to her first child. It says, I, Dragon, the last work of the renowned late artist Juan Jimenez. Yes, Juan Jimenez has passed on. He's a fantastic artist. There's no more new work coming out from him, but this is the last of his works. He is known for the Meta Barons and is being published in English for the first time, this book. It is coming out. Now, I want to warn you, it's fantasy and supernatural. It is $13, $12.99, but I get a nice discount from Deep Discount Comics. But it is 56 pages. So these are expensive, but you're getting a lot of pages, and the art is going to be fantastic. Beautiful, beautiful art. Now, I also want to point out, if you're into dragons, this is something I'm not doing a clip on, but literally on the opposing page, they have a 160-page, $35 book. It's Cirillo, Lord of the Dragons, The Book of the Dragon. So another dragon book. So they went all in on the dragons apparently here, but I am definitely picking up the Juan Jimenez. I've been a fan of his. It's sad that he passed away, but that is life. All of us will pass away one day, and I want to remember him through his art and his storytelling. I've only known him as an artist, so I will like to see his story, and I think this will be good, and I like dragons anyways, and that's going to be my final pick. That being said, I wanted to say thank you to everybody who sends in clips. I know we get a lot of the same tried and true people, but I do appreciate all the people who do send in clips. I always say I like to hear new voices, but there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people that listen to the Preview Spotlight. Like, it's ridiculous. You'll have tens of thousands of downloads, and then you get like a group of maybe 5, 6, 7 people who send in clips. So it's amazing. A lot of people like to listen, but not a lot of people like to participate. So I would love to see, just even if you had 1% of people participating, literally each one of us could only send in one clip because we'd have 5 hours worth of content, which would just be insanity at just 1%. So we always hear that euphemism or that saying, you know, hey, if 1% of people who went to the movies, the Marvel and DC movies, went out and bought a comic, it would turn the comics industry around. You guys are proving that point. If we could just get 1% of you guys who listen to the Preview Spotlight to send in a clip, it would revitalize the Preview Spotlight. But you got to do it. I can't make you do it. So prove me wrong that 1% of you guys can do it. I'd love to see 30, 40, 50 people send in a clip. Heck, I'd like to see 10. but anyways, I do appreciate all of you guys who do send them in. Just so you know, I was on a trip to Hawaii, came back. I got to meet 808 Jason from Hawaii. He was a very nice guy. My wife and I went over to Hawaii, got to meet him. Hopefully going to be meeting Brawlinator soon. I'd love to meet Drew. I got to meet John over in Texas. I just don't travel a ton in the States. My wife and I go overseas a lot. But luckily, we had the business trip over to Hawaii, and I was able to meet up with someone. So if I ever make my way to Seattle or California or wherever, Viking Joker, hopefully I'm somewhere nearby and I can meet you guys one day. I mean, we don't have to hang out a long time. I'm not going to take over, but it was so cool. We just spent like a couple hours chit-chatting, just saying hi, getting to put a face on the name, and then it's just always cool. But anyways, until next time, I'll tell you guys goodbye. Thank you, John, for making me sound better than I really do by editing the stuff. And I'll see you guys in the book club. I'll see you guys in the Slack. And I'll see you guys wherever. Okay, bye.
Brawlinator again. And you knew if you went through previews slow enough, and you know what I do on my side hustle, I was going to mention Florida Man returning to American mythology. That's right. Gary Duba and his ex-stripper wife, Crystal, who's quite troublesome, are back in American Mythology in issue 1 of a 3-issue series coming to American Mythology this summer. Comes out July 31st, and of course, pre-orders are now. It's on page 259, and this is adult, not offensive, but adult humor. It's definitely not for the little kiddies, even though it might sound like it's fun enough to do that. But it's got two different covers. One is a wraparound cover from Matthew Weldon, colored by Kelsey Shannon. It's beautiful. Cover B is a fantastic Chevy Chase Vacation poster homage, originally by the great Boris Vallejo. This is actually done by Adam Miller. Obviously, I am biased towards this, but this is far and away funnier title, and really, in my mind, more cohesive title than the original Florida Man, which, by the way, they are offering the original Florida Man issues 1 through 3. They are making those available again on the solicit. So if you missed out, I mean, it's quite funny, but this is just even funnier. It's one of those rare sequels that surpasses the original. And I think you're going to love it. If you want funny books, it's for grown-ups who still love funny books. Florida Man versus Hogzilla, #1 from American Mythology, available on page 259 of the previews catalog.
Bring it back, funny books, y'all.
Brawlinator again, now on page 338 of the previews catalog. And this is really for those out there who are into the sword and sorcery, Conan the Barbarian, Call the Conqueror, Warlord from DC Comics. This is Mark Schultz's Xenozoic Age series. This is a post-apocalyptic landscape where dinosaurs roam freely, humanity is the endangered species. This is 352 pages. It's black and white. This collects all the classic Xenozoic tale comic stories. And man, this is so good. It's so beautiful too. Written and the cover and the art, all by Mark Schultz. If you have never heard of this and you're like, I don't know if I want to spend that much money, go look online at some of the artwork from Mark Schultz, and you will make up your mind then. Just do it. Do yourself a favor. Check it out. It is Xenozoic Tales on page 338 in this month's previews.
Jason again with my next pick, also in the previews catalog, page 349. It's Dark Shadows, Best of the Original Series. Hermes Press collects the best stories from its complete reprint of Gold Key Comics television tie-in in the legendary supernatural suspense series Dark Shadows. Now fans can get in the mood for the upcoming film by reliving 12 of the best Dark Shadows comic books all over again. For those who are curious about Dark Shadows, this collection is the perfect introduction. It's a soft cover for 336 pages and $49.99. So I have a affinity for this gothic soap opera that ran from 1966 to 1971. It came out on the Sci-Fi Channel when I believe I was in middle school, early middle school, or maybe late middle school. I'm not sure exactly, but I remember coming home and my mom had watched the series when she was young. And so she had the series on and I was just immediately entranced. So it wasn't like your typical soap opera, though it is still a soap opera. It was gothic with werewolves and a vampire and witch and ghosts and things like that. Now it is the 1960s, so it's definitely dated at this point, but they do some time traveling back to the 1700s, the colonial era of the United States, and the whole series is set in Maine. And so anyway, it was a fun series. I'm actually slowly working my way through it the last few years, but I have my work cut out for me because the series is, you know, they're 30-minute episodes, but they completed in that 5-year span, 66 to 71, they completed 1,225 episodes. So I'm definitely enjoying it. I just don't have the time to sit and just, you know, stream dozens and dozens of episodes, but definitely enjoying it. It's actually free on Tubi, the Tubi app. So anyway, it's a fun series. If you like Gold Key comics with a little bit of supernatural twist that connects to a gothic soap opera. So recommend that if you guys like that. Jason again, and with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 362, and this is a re-solicit. It's The Twilight Man by Corin Shadmi. It says, follow Hollywood revolutionary Rod Serling's rise to fame in the golden age of television and his descent into his own personal Twilight Zone, Rod Serling and the Birth of Television. This is a biographical graphic novel of Rod Serling, so it doesn't really cover like the specifics of Twilight Zone, which is one of my favorite television series of all time. Most of those episodes never get old, even though I watched them, you know, over the years several times. But it kind of shows his creative genius early on. It shows some traumatic things that he went through during the war and that kind of shaped his views. It shows his relationship as he meets, you know, his soon-to-be wife and then their relationship over the years. And it shows the stresses of, you know, trying to get in on the television side of it, the business side of it, which it definitely aged him and, you know, caused a lot of stress to his life. All we see are the finished products, and this kind of shows that background. But yeah, I highly recommend this if you're remotely interested in Rod Serling and just how he came to be and popular and developing, you know, the Twilight Zone and the Night Gallery, and then, you know, just the other things that he did that kind of helped elevate him into that golden age of television status of, you know, one of the early pioneers.
Brawlinator again, and for my final pick this month, it's related to the book club. Mad Cave Studios has been picking up a couple of great licenses lately, and on page 372, they are offering Flash Gordon number 1. Now, I got the free Comic Book Day issue from Cowabunga Comics. He sends out, you know, a handful of the free Comic Book Day offerings to people who subscribe and order online. And man, this thing looks beautiful. It's by Will Conrad. He's the artist. My friend Mike Barron is doing a book with Will. Will just does really nice artwork. And I like Will's cover on this, but man, I also like this Dan Panosian cover on page 373, which is an homage to the Flash Gordon movie from 1980. But this is Flash Gordon awaking in a secret prison planet somewhere in the galaxy. Upon learning that Dale Arden is the subject of an assassination plot, he's forced to break out and make his way across the galaxy to save her. Along the way, he encounters old friends, new threats, and a greater mystery surrounding who is pulling the strings of this universe. This is an all-new ongoing series, science fiction pulp. That's all there is to it. Check it out. It's on page 372 and 373 of this month's previews. There's a lot of good picks out there. I can't wait to hear what everybody else has done. But once again, John, thank you so much for just all the infotainment and keeping my fondness of comic books alive. Thanks for what you're doing for the hobby. Thanks for being so transparent and honest in your own reviews of this stuff. We know there's not a whole lot of good stuff out there. It's Sturgeon's rule, 90% of everything is crap. But hopefully we're out here picking that 10% that is worth our time because it seems so limited these days. And just one more quick plug for that Florida Man versus Hogzilla number one. I'm the editor on that. And 2 years ago, we did Florida Man at American Mythology. That book wound up being their number one seller that year. Would love to make this one their number one book this year with your help. I think we can do it. Tell your comic book shop to order an ample amount of those, both covers. It is hilarious. Thanks again for all your support and all the fun that we have here. I can't wait to hear what everybody else has picked. So I'll just shut up now and start doing that. Guys, have a great summer, great Memorial Day. I'll look for you on the Slack channel and join us for the book club. Thanks.
Greetings and salutations. This is Marvin, also known as Viking Joker, and I am in the back of the book, the back of the previous catalog on page 372 in the Mad Cave Studios section, and I'm here to call out Flash Gordon number one, which is an ongoing series from Mad Cave, a publisher I'm not all that familiar with, but I did receive my monthly shipment yesterday, and I have two new books from them. So I perused them just to check them out, see what they look like, see how they feel. You know, when you're buying stuff from a new publisher, you're not always sure, you know, the quality of the materials. Solid materials. Haven't read it yet, so what I got was Dick Tracy number one and Mugshots number one. The third issue of Dick Tracy is a few pages over, and the second issue of Mugshots is a couple pages over from Flash Gordon number one. Now, Flash Gordon number one, why am I picking this one? Let me tell you, I don't know a whole lot about Flash Gordon, and I've very little experience with this character, but very recently, as in the last 2 weeks, I read 8 issues of Flash Gordon from Dynamite, from their series back in 2014. Unfortunately, short series of only 8 issues, but a solid series, a very enjoyable, entertaining adventure, very accessible, beautiful art. That one was written by Jeff Parker, art by Evan Doc Shaner, for the most part. There was a little fill-in art on a few issues, but great series. Unfortunately, like I said, only ran 8 issues, but we now have Jeremy Adams writing and Will Conrad drawing an ongoing Flash Gordon series from Mad Cave Studios. And I am very enthused. I will definitely be picking this up. There's several covers here, obviously, because that's what we do. It's Modern Comics. I got to say, the Dan Panosian retailer incentive cover looks pretty cool, but I will not be getting that. I will be getting the A cover. It's a $4.99 book, 28 full color pages. Release date of July 24th, and here's your solicit. Flash awakes on a secret prison planet somewhere in the galaxy. Upon learning that Dale Arden is the subject of an assassination plot, he's forced to break out and make his way across the galaxy to save her. Along the way, he encounters old friends, new threats, and a greater mystery surrounding who is pulling the strings of this universe. The first exciting issue of an all-new ongoing series. So, if you like Jeremy Adams, been doing some great stuff over at DC, or depending on your opinion of that, and Will Conrad, solid artist. So this looks to be a hit for me. I'm hoping it is. I really am. I'm excited about this one. So I hope you guys check it out, and we can talk about it later. If anybody got in on Dick Tracy and Mugshots, let me know over on the Slack channel. Let's talk about that. Otherwise, on to my next bit. I know I said on to my next clip, but you know what? A little footnote here. The last issue, or not the last issue, the series I was talking about from Dynamite only ran 8 issues. Let's let this one go a little longer. I need your guys' help so that we can get more people on this book and it goes a good 25, 50, 100 issues. Let's make this thing a thing.
Hi, this is Marvin. Probably just heard a clip from me on Flash Gordon's new ongoing series and the solicit that just came out in this month's previews. But if you turn the page over and you go to 374, you're going to find another Flash Gordon book. This one, Flash Gordon Classic Collection, Volume 1, Hardcover. Let me read the solicit for you. Science fiction's most enduring icon, Flash Gordon, returns in a newly restored edition, collecting his earliest adventures with Del Arden and Dr. Han Sarkoff on the mysterious planet Mongo. There, they'll encounter strange landscapes, fantastic creatures, otherworldly characters, and the universe's most diabolical mastermind, Ming the Merciless. Flash Gordon Collection Volume 1 reprints all of Alex Raymond's Sunday strips from January 1, 1934 to April 18, 1937, and includes additional background material and an introduction by Alex Ross. This is 208 pages, $49.99, and it's full color, coming out at the end of July. This very old material I have never read, but based on our book club and kind of having this new appreciation for this character, I think it would be a lot of fun to read this old stuff and compare it to what we're seeing in the modern editions. I know they're going to be different storytelling. Obviously, it's a very different format. It's a newspaper strip, and it's also a very different era. So, right, it's going to be very different. But I'm just curious how the characters line up, how they compare to what I read. And now I've only read 8 issues of a modern Flash comic, so I don't have a whole ton of knowledge about this character. But I have gone down a rabbit hole looking at Wikipedia and trying to understand more about this character. And I just got to say, I had no idea that this character ran so long in newspapers. This character had a strip in newspapers, Sunday strip in newspapers from 1934 to 2003, and a daily strip from 1940 to 1944. And then there was a little break there. And we did it. Then he got a daily strip again from 1951 to 1992. I mean, there's a ton of material here. Now, this is only the first collection. I don't know if I'm going to love it. It's really, you know, material I've never read. And I don't know. I can find it hard to read some older stuff at times because I'm more in tune with how it works nowadays. You know, how modern comics are told. For all the complaints that we might have about how modern comics are told, I'm just used to that now. And I don't know, I might have a hard time reading this. But I'm very curious, and I'm going to pick it up. I think a couple of the guys in the book club might as well. So maybe we'll do a book club on it at some point. But I'm going to check it out, and maybe you will too. If you do, let me know. Let's talk about it on Slack.
Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 396. From Oni Press. It's actually looks like they've somehow acquired the rights or publishing under the rights of EC Comics. It's called Epitaphs from the Abyss, Issue 1. This is an anthology, a 40-page anthology. Looks like it's an ongoing series for $4.99. It says the most notorious name in terror is back with a vengeance. From the publisher that drove Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, and many more into the depraved hearts of an unsuspecting world, the immortal EC Comics returns with its first all-new series in nearly 70 years. In our first extra-size 40-page dose of fear, witness shocking tales of torment and tension in the undying EC tradition as wrenched from the grave by the vile intentions of acclaimed writers Brian Azzarello, Chris Condon, Jay Holtham, and Stephanie Phillips, and realized into bloody reality by all slaughter artists Jorge Fornes, Phil Hester, Peter Cross, and more. What the Comics Code Authority couldn't kill has only made it stronger. EC Comics lives again in Epitaphs from the Abyss. So I'm definitely going to give this series a shot. I am a huge EC Comics fan, specifically those three titles that they mentioned earlier that focused more on, like, you know, the horror side of it. Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, and then obviously its successor in magazine form, Creepy and Eerie magazines that came out a little bit later. But, you know, essentially the Comics Code Authority, when it came about, essentially put EC Comics out of business. Fortunately, they have kept EC Comics alive, continuing to publish the collected editions. They've done it in hardback several times over the years, and I've actually been slowly collecting, you know, most of the series that are in trade paperback. It's printed by Dark Horse, but it still says EC Comics Archives, so it's going through, you know, all of these older series, including the science fiction, war series, and things like that. So I'm hoping that they will give justice to the legacy of EC Comics. I'm hoping that it'll be, you know, not just a kind of blood and guts, gore fest, or torture type stuff, but more of these stories that make you think, these ironic stories or, you know, revenge, you know, from the grave and things like that. So I'm definitely going to give it a shot. I'm hoping, like I said, it's not too violent, but more story driven like the original series was, you know, which would have like a gotcha at the end. On the very next page, or a couple pages later in 398, it talks about the president and publisher of Oni Press, is saying that, you know, they're trying to, you know, stay true to that. So I think I'm going to give that one a shot versus this other anthology called Hello Darkness. And I don't know. I hope that it's good. I am actually an anthology fan as long as it stays focused on, you know, like whatever the series is. So whether it's superheroes or, you know, horror, suspense, supernatural things like that. So I'm hoping that they'll do justice. And it also looks like next month they're doing science fiction series called Cruel Universe. So looks like there'll be two ongoing anthology series published by Oni Press, but under the EC Comics imprint. So if you're interested in that, definitely pick that up. If you enjoyed EC Comics, and if you enjoy the old school EC Comics, you know, they are continuing to do pretty much every month. You have an EC Archive solicited in the previous catalog, and they're not bad. They're $19.99, so less than $20, whereas the original hardbacks that they finished a few years back were $50 a piece. So anyway, I look forward to checking this out. I'm hoping that it'll be a good return to classic EC.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here. I'm on my last pick. I've only got like three or four picks in because, again, I can't really find what I want to read in these books. I'm doing my darndest. So we are looking at page 400 in the previews book. We're looking at Biker Mice from Mars. I had to look it up. It's been a while since I have watched Biker Mice from Mars. I mean, a while as in it came out in 1993 and ended in 96. So, yeah, a lot of the kids right now don't even know what Biker Mice from Mars are. And this is from the Nansalverse. I'll read it from you. Melissa Flores is going to be the writer. Artist is Francis Portella. There's a bunch of covers, like always. We have Mars, Mice, Motorcycles. The next epic chapter in Nansalverse starts now with an all-new, all-adrenaline adventure for the freewheeling, butt-kicking animated icons who ride the Red Planet's hardest roads. So I watched a couple quick skits on YouTube because I was like, oh man, I remember loving Biker Mice from Mars, but I cannot remember anything about them. And it just made me laugh. You can hear like guitar riffs in the background, and it's just like a punk rock, like, great show. I laughed actually at a couple of the clips. They were hilarious. So I'm definitely picking up number one there. I'm definitely getting cover A. I may get a cover B, but after that, it's a 1 in 10, 1 in 20, 1 in 50 for full art variant, variant cover, and blank is also available. The 1 in 50 is the one that it looks like Naturo. What's that? The guy with the bike, Akira? I don't know, something like that. I'm not big on anime. But I will definitely be picking this up. And if you read at the bottom of that whole thing, I'm not going to read you, it says, leading into an upcoming animated series. So that's pretty cool. Biker Mice from Mars are coming back out. Hopefully they keep all the guitar riffs and everything in there, because like I said, it brought back some memories. That was pretty cool. All right, that's my last pick. Thank you, guys. John said he does take MP4s or M4Ps, whatever they are, recordings. Guys, get some new listeners. Guys, throw some stuff in here that you see. Yeah, everyone picks up these books. Everyone picks up comics. If you're reading something and you don't pick up previews, you can go online and do it for free. Or even just tell us what you're reading. Get on the Slack channel. Tell us what you're reading. Enter in some of these. Once a month, we do these previews. Just throw one out there with your voice. Like, we don't care. Well, John will splice it up and make it sound nice, I'm sure. And after you do it once or twice and you're used to your voice, you'll be waiting to hear your voice on this show. And that's pretty cool. You're like, oh man, there it is. That's me. It's pretty cool. So I'm out. Thank you. Peace.
Jason again, this time with my last pick in the previews catalog on page 432. It's Jack Kirby Collector 91 30th Anniversary Edition. It's 84 pages for $10.95. So this is their 30th anniversary, Tomorrow's Publishing 30th anniversary. And this company started with John Morrow and his wife, thus the Tomorrows. They started this company doing Jack Kirby fanzines. He was a huge Jack Kirby fan. And so this one looks like a pretty big collection, but I wanted to kind of like dig into what Tomorrow's Publishing is all about, because not everybody likes to collect magazines and things like that. You know, obviously they do have several issues and books on Jack Kirby, because that's how the company started back in 1994. But they've done so many other things, like Alter Ego, which also started out as a fanzine. They will focus on different, you know, characters, sometimes from the Fawcett universe. In Back Issue, where it sometimes will focus on a particular era, like 60s Batman, or a creator, and like the different works that they did and how they evolved and developed over the years. And there's one series called Comic Book Creator, once again, that focuses on like the life of the creator and how their life interwove with the comics that they made. They've done a really good job with a lot of books. One of my favorite series is called The American Comic Book Chronicles, in which they've gone from essentially 1940 all the way through the end of the 90s. And, you know, just a lot of material. It goes year by year. It talks about the major events and all that. There's only one book left, which should be coming out here in the next couple of months. And then basically you'll have the 40s through the end of the 90s completely covered. So they're always doing good things, focusing on the classic creators from the Golden Age and Silver Age and now into the Bronze Age. But like I said, Kirby Collector is one of the magazines, Comic Book Artists, Alter Ego, Back Issue, you know, and they've done actual books as well. They did a great book about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. It was called Kirby and Lee, Stuff Said. And then that one focused in on chronologically Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's comments about each other from the first comments that they have recorded all the way up basically until their deaths when they were talking about each other. And it just presents the evidence out there so you can kind of make your own judgment on that. But anyway, it's a very good company. I highly recommend their books. It's very high quality. They also did one called The World of Tomorrows, which focused in on their the history of their own company and how it developed. So that's a fun book as well. So I highly recommend this if you are a classic Jack Kirby fan or a comic book history fan. It's a great company with well thought out articles and books.
Hi, it's Marvin, and I'm in the back of the previous catalog on page 436 in the Vault section, and I'm calling out Barbaric versus Deathstalker. It's a one-shot. If you're not familiar with these two franchises, Barbaric is a barbarian with a talking axe. Deathstalker, I actually don't know. I just received the first issue of Deathstalker yesterday in my monthly shipment, so I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I got the cool slash cover for Deathstalker number one, and I'm looking forward to it. But this is Barbaric versus Deathstalker, and it says, here's your solicit, Axe versus Sword, Owen versus Deathstalker. When an evil wizard summons the two most reluctant heroes of all time, they'll have to square off, but a clash of steel alone may not decide the final victor. Written by Tim Seeley and Michael Morakai. Art by Nathan Gooden. These are the creatives that are behind both Barbaric and Deathstalker. So that makes sense that they would be the creatives on this one shot. It sounds like kind of almost like a what if, right? There's a wizard here that's going to bring these two people that don't belong together and make them fight. A little secret wars action, maybe. Anyway, I'm definitely on board. I'm bored for anything Barbaric. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
I hope everybody found something of interest in the various pre-order catalogs this month. We had a really good turnout. We had, about 2 hours worth of content this time around. I want to thank James, Brawlinator, Marvin, Patrick, Moe, Nicholas, and Jason for sending in clips. Again, a lot of good stuff. Appreciate that. Want to remind people the preview spotlight number 200 is just 2 months away in July. I'd love to get some more listeners involved, you know, before then, after then, etc. Part of why I want that is not only does it give me good suggestions on what I should be getting, and I'll be honest, there are times I'm struggling to find some stuff I'm excited about. Sometimes just having a little additional information on something is what it takes to tip me and other listeners into the direction of, yep, that's for me and I should get that. But also, I use this as a way to kind of gauge what are people interested in. And I'll be honest, I found it really interesting there was only one clip for any of the new X-Men stuff. There was more clips on The Domain by Chip Zdarsky over at Image than there was on the totality, basically, of the X-Men franchise relaunch. So I'm kind of wondering if I should take that as, well, listeners aren't interested in that, so maybe I don't focus on that. And I'm sure there are a lot of you listening thinking, oh, but I'm super excited about it, which is awesome and great, and I hope you are. But if you don't participate, if you don't get engaged, I have no way of knowing that. And I think this is a great way for you to support the comics you like, for me to learn about what comics you like, which again influences what we do in back issue spotlights, what we talk about on the monthly comic spotlight and things like that. And while we had 2 hours of content here, again, there were only 7 people who submitted. And I know we've got way more listeners than that. And I don't expect everybody to submit every month or even everybody to submit at all. I know a lot of people are happy just being listeners, and that's great. I appreciate you. But I also got to say, I appreciate you in the abstract, because I have no idea who you are. And if you don't give some kind of feedback, whether it's sending in clips, posting on the forum, joining the Slack channel, or just emailing me once in a while saying, hey, I listened to this episode and I liked it and stuff. You know, I got one email recently, which I really appreciate, from Douglas about, you know, maybe I should do a back issue spotlight on Secret Wars 2. We did one on the first series, wants to know what I think on the second. I've since added that on the list of things to do with a back issue spotlight at some point. Now, in all fairness, it may be a while before we get to that, but it is now on the list. And this podcast, I do it because I enjoy comics, but also because I enjoy talking about comics and hearing from people about comics. So that's part of why I've been on this drive the last couple of months as we get to preview Spotlight 200, of getting more listener engagement in these episodes. Because again, it's a great way to support the comics you love, to learn what other people are enjoying. And I've gotten so much out of these episodes, out of talking with people on the book club and stuff like that. I really am trying to get a lot of people more engaged to whatever level they're comfortable with the comic book page community. It's a fun group. There's a lot you can learn, a lot you can discuss and enjoy about comics that way. And it's super easy to do clips. All you got to do is record it on your cell phone or your computer, send it in. I can accept pretty much any format. If it's something other than an MP3 or the M4A, which is pretty popular on cell phones and stuff, it might be worth double checking just to make sure I can process that, but I should be able to. We've got an open submission policy on these episodes. Like I said, I want to get more voices, more opinions in these episodes. I didn't see anything this month, and I don't recall the last time we've gotten much on some manga. We get some trades and some collections and stuff like that, but we got some really good stuff on some of the horror anthologies coming out. But more people, more viewpoints, more diverse picks that we get these months, and that's what I'm after. The deadline of the preview spotlight is usually the second Saturday of the month. You can always check the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on that next deadline and to sign up for email reminders. I will tell you right now, it's looking like in August. It may not be the second Saturday. It may end up being the first Saturday, just because I've got some scheduling stuff in August that's going to keep me kind of busy. And even if we do it the first Saturday in August, that's going to be kind of tight for me. But I'll see what I can do. I got a little time to figure that out. As it is, the deadline for the next preview spotlight, number 199, covering the June solicitations, is going to be 9 a.m. Saturday, June 8th. Now, if you need another couple hours or even into the next day, email me, let me know. I'll let you know if I can handle that or not. It just depends how my schedule is looking like that weekend. I'll be honest, usually if it's just an hour or two or three or whatever, you need till noon or whatever, go ahead and send it in. If you need a little more time, I'm willing to work with you if I can, based on my schedule and stuff. Because again, I want to get more people involved. I want to hear from more people and understand what they're liking, why they're liking it. Because not only does that give me more information on maybe what I should be reading that I might enjoy, but also things to talk about on the podcast. So, like I said, I hope everybody found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs. And with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.